Turn my music high, 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 yeah.
You don't know what you're doing.
Sure I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, agents of change, welcome to another episode of Back in the Black. I'm your host, Frank Mosley II, bringing you episode 12, Using Taxes as an Investment Strategy. Thanks for tuning in. Maybe you didn't hear me when I said using taxes as an investment strategy. I know you're thinking, how do I use money that I put into the government? Money that's taken out of my pocket, taken out of my check. Money that's being taxed on everything that I use, everything that I buy. How do I turn that into an investment strategy? How do I get money back other than a refund check? And if I do get a refund check, how do I maximize that in a way that generates an even bigger windfall than the tax credits and the things that I'm currently looking at? Well, today, we're going to take a deep dive into that. I brought on a special guest to help us take a look at it. I'm going to get into that in a minute. But first, there's a few things we got to talk about. I want you to ask yourself, what do you know about taxes? I mean, what do you really know about them? Think about it. If you are putting money into a system that is supposed to pay for services like education, like firemen and police, like our court system, like infrastructure, all the things that are supposed to benefit us as citizens, you have to ask yourself, why are there certain areas, certain communities, certain neighborhoods that don't seem to be, well, getting their fair share of this collective pot that either the state or your local government manages? It's interesting to me that if you look at how taxes are distributed, it's based on your zip code. And the zip code and the district that you live in, the county that you live in, determines how much resources you get based on the amount of money that county spends. So if you have an area that has a lot of commerce, a lot of businesses, where you have a lot of people spending money, buying products, using restaurants, using services, supporting local businesses, all that money is then taxed, right? All that money goes back into where? A system. And that system then determines how that money is allocated, how that money is spent, what neighborhoods, what communities, what resources are allocated based on how big that community or how big that local area commerce is. So when you see the skyscrapers, when you see the large buildings, when you see major banks setting up headquarters in areas, then you know that this is a place that is receiving a large tax revenue. When you look at local rural areas, and there's very little businesses, only one Walmart, and no one to compete with that but other than a few grocery store chains, then you know they're not producing as much tax revenue as a city would, right? Which means they don't have as many resources. Now, if you live in a city, and on one side of the tracks, or one side of the red line, due to gerrymandering, you may see traveling down a few more blocks or into a different zip code, more resources being supplied to that area than yours. Why is that? Why have we allowed our government to manipulate our resources, our tax money, our tax dollars in a way that does not serve the people, does not strengthen our communities, does not strengthen our ability to grow? We're not holding them accountable. We're not exercising our freedom to hold them accountable after we've elected them in a free election to make these decisions on our behalf. We have to be more in tune with every decision that politicians are making, because those tax dollars and how they are spent, they affect your children, they affect the stores that you shop in, they affect the roads that you drive on, they affect the water, They affect the amount of police and community resources, social services that you have attained to you. Listen, the reason I'm making so much noise about this is because there is a huge transfer of wealth that is about to take place. There's something that's happening here locally in Virginia, and then there's something happening nationwide. Both of these things we need to be acutely aware of. We need to have our eyes on the prize, because we may have missed it, especially if you're a person of color, the first time it happened or the last time it happened, which was during the 50s, during the GI Bill. This was a piece of legislation that allowed many white, poor whites to use the government's tax dollars and credits and benefits to purchase land. Land that they have been able to own and leverage in neighborhoods that they have been able to build businesses and communities around. And because of that, they've been able to build and consolidate wealth in these pockets, in these zip codes, in these districts, in these counties. And because of that, they get better schools. Listen, we've seen this story play out before. What I'm telling you is nothing new. This is not something that hasn't happened or hasn't been happening for over 60 to 100 years. We have to be better at understanding how taxes impact our dollars, our black and brown dollars. And I know you think, oh, Frank, you're going to get on the mic and you're going to start talking about how free is free when it comes to taxes. I'm not here to rail against our government and the way that we fund our government. What I am here to rail against is how free are our civil liberties when it comes to taxing black and brown like you and me. What I mean by that is that the tax dollars and revenues aren't equally distributed in the areas that they need it. We know that the need is there. We know that the money is there, and yet it's continuously denied by bureaucrats, by gatekeepers, by politicians with ulterior motives. Enough is enough. We elected you to work for us, to put those tax dollars, the same tax dollars that fund our government, the same tax revenue that creates our budgets. We need those funds directed where they are most needed, in communities of color. Now, I say this because in Virginia, they've just passed a bill. While it's still being debated, in 2024, recreational or adult use marijuana will be legal. There will be a lot of people looking at, how can I get into this market? How can I get a retail store and set up a dispensary? How can I get some land and grow some in a grow farm? How can I get a greenhouse and set up some hydroponic lamps so I can grow inside? I know you're thinking, you're cultivating, you're innovative, you're imaginative. Here's what I want you to think about, though. All those dollars that's going to be spent on the bags from out of the dispensary, all those dollars that are going to be spent on the edibles and the ingredients to make the edibles, all those dollars that are going to be spent on all the byproducts that you're going to be able to make, all of the manufacturing, the gas that has to be purchased, the vehicles that have to ship it back and forth, the packaging that has to be bought and spent, all of these tax dollars going to be a huge revenue boost for our government, right? And where are these tax dollars going? Are they going back into the same communities that already are receiving the majority of the tax dollars? Because why? Their neighborhood is producing more taxes? Or do we demand that those tax dollars go back into the black and brown communities who have already paid with their blood and their time decriminalizing marijuana across the country, paving the way for a bill like this to be passed, giving us the breadcrumbs from off of the retail sales that we then have to turn around and pay taxes on? And that tax money is not going back into bettering our schools, bettering our communities, paying our teachers more, making sure that we have investment opportunities, investment vehicles, opportunities for growth, sustainable wealth, long-term wealth building. If you're not talking to me about that, then you're not having the right conversation. In my opinion, this is what we need to be talking about, because this is the biggest transfer of wealth that we're not a part of. We're not even in the conversation, let alone in the game. There are decisions that are being made at the General Assembly, and we don't even have a voice because we don't have the information. We don't have the knowledge about how our tax dollars are truly being spent and how this tax revenue will be spent, because we're so excited about the carrot that they dangled in front of us. Oh, you get to have recreational marijuana. It's for free. You can buy it at the store. It's for free. How free is free? How free is free? What I'm telling you is that we have to start thinking like investors and not like consumers. In order to free ourselves, we have to free our minds. We have to relearn what, or even learn for the first time, what has been taught to us or what has failed to been taught to us. We have to start teaching each other. We have to start supporting each other. We have to start coming together as communities, online communities, and definitely in neighborhoods where resources are scarce, if none at all. We can make a difference as social entrepreneurs. If you don't know how, if you don't have a plan, if you want to work with a group of individuals who do, Seed for All, Social Education for Economic Development Initiative, there's a seat at the table for you. I've invited people before to come, to roll up their sleeves, to come have a seat with their resources, with their visions, with their plans, and let's go to work. I'm happy to say the people are answering my call. I don't look at the numbers on social media. I love the support that I'm getting, and I hope my following continues to grow. But you can be assured that my focus and my goal is to build a movement that will change the narrative for black and brown people and communities of color. Now, you didn't see or hear me this week on social media. I wasn't putting out my normal post. It's because I was answering the call, because I was putting people at the table, because we were putting plans together. We were implementing plans together. We were seeing progress being made. So my apologies. Believe me, your support and your understanding of what I'm doing and all of the projects and programs that I and the Seed Initiative is supporting means so much to me. Please continue, like, share, follow. But understand that at Back in the BLK, the information that I'm providing you with, the links that I'm providing you with, is to uplift you, is to inform you, it is to get you in the game. Because believe you me, there's a game being played. And I want us all who have been losing this game to finally win. and we win by understanding the rules to the game. It's like when I was a kid, I used to pick up a joystick and I hated reading the manual. I never wanted to understand what each button did. I just wanted to jump right in. And I was pretty good. My hand and eye coordination, I could figure things out pretty quickly. But here's the thing, at some point in time, I would end up losing. If I was the hero, I would end up dying before I ended the mission. It was because I didn't understand all the rules to the game. I thought I did. But I had to go back to the manual. I had to go back to the instruction guide. And then I really started winning. Hell, sometimes I went online, I got the cheat code. The point is that there is a cheat code. There is a guide. There is a plan. There are strategies and there are resources to help you implement those strategies and to help you win. Agents of Change, the game has just begun for us because the rules to the game have now been changed. Why? Because we are aware. We are awoke. And now we are planning and we are executing. Organizations have come to the table. They have given me the opportunity to share my vision with them and theirs with me. And we have found so many commonalities, so many ways to work together, so great wealth of knowledge that no dollar amount could ever add up to the relationships, which is the greatest commodity that I deal in, could ever put a price tag on. Collaborating, working together, we are making things happen. And soon we'll be sharing some of our progress with you. I don't want to take up the whole show talking about the Seed Initiative and Seed for All. But I do want to let you know that we are going to make a change and we are going to do it together. When Black, Brown, and White unite, there's nothing that we can't accomplish. So stay tuned, stay locked into this stream. There's more information to come. There's more events that we're planning. There's a lot of noise that we need to make. And we plan to make as much noise as we can. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to remember, follow me on social media. Check me out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Back in the BLK. Check out past episodes at backintheblk.com. And if you haven't heard How Free is Free, please go to empowerstudios.com or howfreeisfree.com. You got to hear it. I appreciate all of the support, all of the goodwill, and all of the compliments that I received about that piece. So thank you so much. I appreciate it all. Listen, we're going to get into the next part of the show. Today, I have a very special guest that I brought on to talk about taxes, to talk about strategies with taxes, how we can use taxes to create windfalls for ourselves, to create benefits for ourselves. So without further ado, let's get into it with my man, Eric Pierre. Eric is the CEO and owner of Pierre Accounting. He has a full accounting services with offices in Austin, San Diego, and Los Angeles. I mean, he helps clients with tax accounting, compliance, advanced tax, estate planning. I mean, the brother really does his thing. Also, he does forensics and financial audits. Got to let you know. If you need to get in contact him for about any of those services, just remember, he doesn't do the legal stuff. But you can definitely check him out at Your Fave CPA on all of his social media handles, especially on Twitter. Eric Pierre, who's going to tell us how to get back in the black when it comes to taxes. Stay locked into this stream, please. You definitely don't want to miss this. Here on Back in the Black, we're always looking for ways to get our audience, communities of color, back to a place where we are sound mind financially. And I wanted to bring you on because, of course, this is tax season, right? And so part of being sound of sound financial mind is to make sure that your taxes are in order, because those are one of those things that can kind of really trip you up as you're trying to grow and build your long-term wealth. But, you know, I'm sure you get a lot of questions about taxes. I want to do just something a little bit different here, Eric, because I want to know about you, right? Because you are a very interesting person yourself. And I want to know how you got into doing taxes. Like, that's not something that most individuals are pursuing as a hobby or a career. How did you get started? What made you interested in wanting to be a tax guru, if you will?
Okay, that's a great question. Thank you for asking. Well, you know, growing up in Houston, I was playing basketball in my backyard. And one day my father, who was a CPA, but not a practitioner, pulls me aside and says, "Son, got a couple questions for you." I said, "Sure." I said, "Have you gotten a recruitment letter from Dean Smith?" It's like, "Nope." "Roy Williams at Kansas?" "Nope." "Has the NBA called about drafting out of high school?" I said, "No." I said, "You know, I know you're pretty good in basketball, but you may want to have a fallback plan just in case things don't work out." So I was like, "All right." So I did a research paper on his profession, accounting. I learned that it was a recession-proof job, and I was pretty good at math at the time. So I said, "Okay." And that's how I chose it. And then from there, when I got to college, I was blessed to intern with Deloitte & Touche. And then they hired me full-time after college. And that's basically how it started. And then about 6 years ago, I decided to go on my own when I hit that glass ceiling, because I wanted to be able to build wealth for myself instead of other people, and also be able to have better relationships with clients instead of being in a controlled environment. So that's how I got to where I'm at.
Amazing story, right? So it's like those are the things that really build character. And I commend your dad for planting that seed in your head, right? To be able to say, listen, you got to have the vision and the foresight to say, not everybody's going to make it in the NBA. Not everybody's going to be a superstar. What's your plan B? What's your backup plan? And your plan B ended up becoming your plan A. And you've been very successful in your career in doing that. So I commend you for all of your dedication, because we need more Black tax professionals, right? We need more individuals that can educate us. And for yourself, you know, you have strategies, right? And that, I think, is something that we need to start looking at as well. When it comes to tax season, people either are excited about it because they're getting their refund check, and a lot of people have calculated that as part of their income, or they're like, "Oh man, it's tax season. I got to pay back taxes. I got to do this complicated tax form. I got to come up with the money to hire a tax professional to file my taxes," right? So everybody has their own reasons for either coming up with a plan, or should have their own reasons for coming up with a plan or a strategy. One of the things I wanted to look at is how early do you start, or how early do you suggest people start thinking about, because it's that important to their financial well-being, especially those individuals are using this as part of their income. Is it January? Is it December? Is it November? When do we start making a plan?
You should be thinking about it at least once a month, because, you know, as you mentioned, for most of us, taxes are going to be, you know, the largest expense you pay in your life. And that's something that we shouldn't take for granted. But unfortunately, a lot of people, particularly in our community, we take that for granted. And if you get a large tax refund, that's actually a bad thing, because you're giving the federal government an interest-free loan.
Break that down a little bit, brother, because I don't think people understand that.
Okay, so if you're getting large refunds, now, there are instances where there are tax strategies that generate that. But if you're doing excessive withholding, you are giving the federal government an interest-free loan. And as you can see with the pandemic, we've had clients that they haven't received a refund in a year. In fact, I still haven't received my own refund from last year. The IRS and I would go back and forth about it. And so having a good tax plan allows you to maximize your tax breaks, but also, you know, increase in your monthly cash flow, because I know that you mentioned about we don't have enough financial professionals, and I love my wealth manager people, and there are some that I work with really good. But if you work with the right tax professional, you're going to get a much higher return on investment. I can save somebody 30 to 60% of their taxes. That can generate, you know, anywhere from $10,000 to a few million dollars a year. A good wealth manager year over year on average is going to generate 8 to 12%. I mean, obviously you have some years of 20%, but CPAs such as myself, we can generate 30 to 60% savings, which could turn into tens to hundreds to millions of dollars in cash flow going back to your family, such as a client of ours in Orange County that we got her $300,000.
Wow.
In taxes coming back because of aggressive strategies through the CARES Act. That's something that wealth managers don't really do every year.
Exactly. And so these are the things that we don't really appreciate about having this service or, you know, hiring someone like you who is a tax professional that can create those plans and strategies. I did have a guest on before who was a financial planner, a wealth manager, as you put it. We also talked about putting together a financial plan, right? And so planning is huge when you're trying to build long-term wealth, and having a strategy is key as well. There's a lot of tax benefits, and you mentioned the CARES Act. You know, there's things that are available now because of COVID-19. What are some tax breaks and benefits? Let's start first up before I go into that. What's the number one? Tell me this. What's the number one tax deduction that you see people miss the most often on when they're filing?
Ooh.
What's the juicy one that they could really, like, really benefit from? They miss all the time. Like, man, how did they miss this one?
A regular tax deduction, I would say a lot of small business owners are missing the opportunity to take advantage of a home office deduction. That's the top one that I personally see. Mm. And then with the current pandemic environment, a lot of business owners that have payroll are missing out on the employee retention tax credit, where the government is willing to give you up to $19,000 in cash refundable credit against your payroll taxes per employee that qualifies. So we have clients right now that may qualify for, we're trying to work with a public company in Austin that may have qualified for a couple million dollars in tax credit. And then we have a small business owner we're working with that we can get them $400,000 of cash back into their company. So I think those are the two that are being missed, the home office for day-to-day, and then with the CARES Act, the employee retention credit.
Nice bit of information. I hope everybody wrote that down. If not, play it back. It's going to be on backintheblk.com, so you'll have another opportunity to take a listen. Another thing is, like I said, tax breaks and benefits, right? So is there anything new? Like you said, the CARES Act, that may be something that some people are aware of, some people are not. It's been around for a little while.
Right.
Is there anything else that's new out there that may have surfaced that, you know, small business owners or even individuals could take advantage of that we may not be aware of that you have in your purview?
Okay, well, so the CARES Act last year that came out, if you have a what we call a net operating loss where you have negative income on your tax return, you may be able to carry it back and apply it the past 5 years. That expires this tax year. So for 2020 and 2019 and 2018, if you had a net operating loss, you can carry back 5 years to get money back. We got somebody $300,000 back. You know, they had paid a couple $100,000 in taxes on a sale of a home in Newport Beach. We got them their tax back. We have another client right now where we're doing an aggressive depreciation strategy, which will allow them to get money back on tax. They paid a lot of taxes the past few years. They had a growing construction. They have a growing construction company. We're about to get a few $100,000 back in her pocket as well. So that's one thing for business owners, particularly, are missing out on opportunities like that.
Good point. So yeah, we definitely need to be more aware. It brings me to some other thoughts of mine, though. You know, when you're trying to get your maximum return on filing, it's key to be able to turn to someone like you, right? A tax professional. Mm-hmm. You were encouraged by your father to look at, you know, him as a mentor, as a role model. I mean, you had that in your environment. And so for those who don't, I'm curious, because we don't learn this in school.
No.
If it's, you know, basic education, primary education, unless you have a passion for, like you said, math or numbers or even accounting or something that related to finance, this may not be something that you go into. And I'm just curious, just from your professional perspective, one, do you think this is something that should be taught in the schools? I mean, should we be educating ourselves on tax law? as citizens, as everyday business owners, as everyday individuals who need to be more aware of how we can create these strategies and plans. If I'm creating a plan for a business, I'm going to do some research. If I'm creating a plan for investing, I'm going to do some research. I'm going to do some studying. I'm going to try to educate myself. Should we be doing that as well? And what kind of materials, if you think that we should we be looking at?
I do agree that I believe that this should be part, you know, personal finance should be part of our public school education, but it's not. And so what happens is that when we look at the disparities amongst the communities, you know, Black community, we don't know a lot about it because, for instance, we have 650,000 CPAs in this country. And according to the National Society of Black CPAs, of whom I'm a member of, less than 5,000 of those such CPAs are Black. Mm-hmm. So part of the problem is that there's not a lot of us that are in that field that are qualified to talk about these things. And so we do need to work on educating ourselves. You know, part of it is, you know, our organization, the NSBCPA, we are taking initiatives, going out to the junior high, high schools, teaching kids about accounting, because accounting is the language of business. And you don't have to have an accounting degree, but if you can understand how a financial statement works, you can understand how business should be working. You know, Mark Cuban talks about when he looks at buying a business, the first thing they look at are financial records. I also do financial expert work, and I can tell you if you don't keep books and records, you will end up in court, and you'll have to spend a lot of money paying someone like me to keep you from losing your money to somebody else. So it'd be nice to see some public school reform, and a part of it is that we have to take responsibility to continue to educate our community. And then, you know, when people in the community see us to take advantage of it and not take it for granted, because there's not a lot of us, because quite frankly, the ASCPA even gave a stat that, you know, 1% of Blacks can make partner CPA firm, but yet the NCAA says that I have a better chance of being drafted into the NBA or NFL than I do make a partner of an accounting firm. And you know, wow. I've told people in the industry, if things don't change and I have a son, I'm probably going to make sure he makes the NBA, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what is it that you think that we need to kind of – personal finance is one of the things that I'm very passionate about, making sure that the high schools have them. Some states have mandated as part of their curriculum. I'm a certified financial literacy educator or instructor, so I am extremely passionate about it. I have several programs that I'm trying to get – put forth in school systems to ensure that they have that understanding. But as far as, you know, like you say, getting people to become accountants, right? I have a friend of mine who's ecstatic about doing bookkeeping and doing numbers, but that's not for everyone. What type of incentive, because I think that more than anything, money moves people, right? Like, what type of income can someone who is thinking about coming out of high school or going into college and think about, well, I don't know exactly what I want to do. I do like money. I do like numbers. I'm cool with Excel spreadsheets, whatever the case may be. What is it that they think they could say, okay, well, I could possibly make this type of money if I become a tax professional? What could incentivize them in that way, do you think?
Well, you can make, you know, 6 to 7 figures and up in this industry. Now, you don't have to be a CPA to be a tax professional, because you could be a registered tax preparer. A lot of states have that. And then also, you can also be an enrolled agent. And there are people that get those designations that are building large practices. If you're willing to put in the work, what some people do, they'll start off working at a place like H&R Block or Jackson Hewitt, learn the tax code under somebody else, and then go on their own. You can make a lot of money. I know practitioners that are not CPAs that do quite well for themselves. You know, they have a tax practice, and then they also sell, you know, life insurance in the off season, and they're able to make, I know a friend of mine in outside Houston, he makes a couple $100,000 a year. He lives quite comfortably in North Houston and owns a lot of property, and he's been doing it for years and years and years. You know, he was the elder at a church I used to attend in Houston. So you don't have to be a CPA. I mean, I prefer that you do have it, but you can. If you want to get into the business, you know, there's a lot of money to be made because there's so many people that need help with their finances.
And I think a lot of people, when they think about taxes, they think it's only seasonal. But as you mentioned, there's other lanes, there's other services that you can provide that extend from your involvement in doing taxes and preparing taxes. So I want people to understand that there are other opportunities for us to build long-term wealth. There's other ways for us to be able to be financially fit and solve it, but there are other career opportunities out there as well that we can look at and pursuing, because I don't think that people think about the tax profession as being, sometimes, as being anything more than a seasonal job. I can make $15,000 to $20,000 preparing taxes maybe during one season, but how do I make money through the entire year? But you've given us some insight on how you can continue to grow.
Right. And also you have to be willing to, you know, so in my practice, I've had to, you know, diversify into other areas where, you know, for instance, I'm working on tax planning for some senior executives of a publicly traded company because they have stock options that they can exercise, you know, different parts of the year. And some of these executives have about, you know, let's say $2 to $5 million of holdings. And so you can do some pre-planning to lower their tax exposure. So if you're willing to get to some of the advanced planning and learn from the right people, then there's a lot of opportunities because, you know, particularly with the, what I call the higher accomplished individuals, families, they need help all throughout the year because they're always worried about, okay, I'm going to make $1 million here, $500,000 here. I'm always worried about that, you know, every dollar I make that, you know, 40, 50% of it is going to the federal state government.
So one of the things that I wanted to, that you just touched on, I wanted to kind of piggyback off of, because I think that's a really great, important point, is how you structure your business. You just talked about a client that you have that has an IPO, right? That's about to go public, be publicly traded. Some people don't understand what that means. That means it's going to go to the stock market and it's going to be publicly traded so people can then purchase the stock on the open market.
Right.
And that value usually shoots up exponentially, especially during the first few days or first week of trading, which is where a lot of windfalls are created for individuals who know about those opportunities prior to. Now, a lot of businesses don't get that far, but there are certain structures that will benefit you based on your taxes, especially if you're a new business and you're trying to figure out, well, which direction am I going, right? How do I determine what is the best governance structure for me? And a lot of people don't realize when they say, well, I'm going to start an LLC, that they're doing it and getting incorporated, not just so they can secure that name, but because you're getting an EIN number assigned to you through the IRS so that they can look at how you are going to file your taxes as a business. And so if you could just talk to my audience a little bit about the different benefits for different tax structures. If you're a small business owner and you're looking to start, one of the things that I always want people to think about is how can you structure your business in a way to create growth? Can you structure in a way where you can sell shares of stocks to investors? And so give us some insight on some of the benefits of some of these different governance structures, whether it's an LLC, an S Corp, a C Corp, and which one would you suggest that a small business start with?
That's a good question. I mean, you have, you know, various types of business, and it depends on your setup. So we'll start with the sole proprietor. Basically, you have your own name. You go into business, you don't have any corporate protection. So I usually don't recommend that. I usually recommend at a minimum that most people starting out have an LLC, which is known as limited liability company. It's considered a disregarded entity, but you are able to get an EIN and you can get some protection. You can protect your personal assets. Now, if you invest in real estate, we recommend, unless you're a flipper, that you put your investment real estate in LLCs for tax purposes. Then you also have an LLP, limited liability partnership. Now, certain industries require you to be formed like that, such as, you know, accounting firms, doctors, depending on your trade. So whenever you set up your business, make sure that you look up your industry rules in your respective states, because some states allow certain organizations to set up one way. You know, lawyers can't be an LLC, but they can be a PLLC or whatever. So you have that partnership. And then you have the S and C Corp. We usually have a lot of our clients be an S corporation because it's kind of like an LLC, but then you're avoiding the self-employment tax. You're able to start paying yourself on payroll. And these are going to be for the smaller companies. And then the C Corp, most publicly traded companies are going to be in C corps because S corps you can only have about 100 investors. So if you have a company that's going to have a lot of investors and a lot of cash, and you're looking to do some R&D and do heavy reinvestment, we generally recommend a C corporation. But most small business owners should not be a C corporation because a C corporation has a flat tax right now, 21%, and then when you pay yourself, you're basically getting into the double taxation.
Right. They still haven't fixed that. I'm still waiting for somebody to fix that part of the tax code so entrepreneurs aren't double taxed.
Yeah.
I guess they look at it as, you know, if you have a smart tax professional like yourself, there's enough loopholes to where that 21% can be reduced to, I don't know, 3% or you know, some people, the Buffett rule, they don't pay anything, right? Pay less than what the secretary pays. So there are some maneuvers, like you said, there's strategies to this plan of action that you put forth to maximize your benefits and being able to understand how to structure your business in a way to like you said, if you're an LLC, you're protecting your assets through pass-through, right? So how do you best benefit and leverage your own personal resources, your own personal foundation, if you will, for starting and growing a business? Because when you start off from the bottom, you're all you got. You have to put together your own resources, and then you try to look at where you can find the funding. And so I think about investors, right, and being able to sell shares, to be able to structure your business at some point in time from an LLC to a C corp, where you can start selling shares privately. It doesn't have to be traded on the market, but you can do rounds of fundraising, which will allow you to raise capital to support your business and some of your business goals. But they're investors, so you do have to pay them back, right? So
yes,
it's all in the numbers.
Correct.
Now, again, we're in tax season. Some people have already filed early. A lot of people are using different methods. Like you said, some people are going to H&R Block. There are some people who are, so others are hiring tax professionals like yourself, and I'm not trying to discourage them, but I'm sure you're you have a lot of clients already. We could never give you too many, I'm sure. So I'm not trying to steal any of your clients by diverting them to some of these other platforms. But I think about entrepreneurs who use software because they may not be able to feel like they can afford a professional like you, or someone who is an individual who may not be very comfortable with divulging their personal finance, right? I find in financial literacy, a lot of times talking about people's personal money can be a little touchy. I don't know if you find that with, you know,
yes,
with taxes, but a lot of times people are embarrassed about how much they make, or they make so much money. They don't want you to know that they make that much money, or they may be making some under the table. They don't know how to file it quite right. And so they're very reluctant to do it through an individual, right? And so there's these free tax platforms, TurboTax. Are any of these tools that you like more than the other, any of them that you would suggest people kind of get acclimated to? And if you know, the pros and the cons, right? You know, if people are using them, you can see the benefit out of using them, and the cons, maybe, you know, well, you can use those, but this is the benefit from coming to someone like Eric Pierre. This is what you're going to get in a, you know, versus using one of those free platforms or even one of those paid platforms.
What I will say, you should only be using that software if you have a very basic situation where you have one or two W-2s, then I recommend you use something like TurboTax or HR Block software. But once you own property, whether it's your primary home or you're starting to make a high salary or you own investment property, you should hire a tax professional such as myself, because the thing is, like, the tax those tax softwares, they're interviewing you as if you already have an understanding of the tax code, and most people do not. Considering that every year we're overpaying taxes by about $2 to $3 billion. So somebody doesn't know what they're doing if we as a country continue to overpay. And so I find my experience, a lot of people reluctant because we have a minimum fee that we charge for tax returns. People are like, well, somebody else does it cheaper. But the thing is, when you work with someone like me, you know, we help provide IRS support if there's a mistake or an issue. You know, a lot of tax practitioners that are charging significant lower fees, whenever there's an issue, they run and hide. And then the client's stuck holding the bag. You know, mm-hmm. TurboTax and HR Block software, they don't do a good job of customer support if the IRS sends a letter inquiring about their return. So that's one of the differences that I would say. But, you know, and then again, you know, if you have a small business and you're not willing to invest in, you know, a good tax professional, whether it's myself or somebody else, then I have to question how seriously can we take you as a business owner, because taxes are going to be your biggest expense. You know that you can't go to the Mercedes dealership and ask for that new S-Class that's priced at $110,000, say, hey, can you sell it to for $20,000? But yet when it comes to financial services, we try to do that, but, you know, we're willing to pay full price for an iPhone. We're willing to pay full price for, you know, these things. Nothing wrong with that stuff. We're willing to overpay for a pair of Jordans on GOAT and Stadium Goods, but somebody, a tax professional, asks you for $500 to couple thousand dollars for a small business return, it's a problem. But that ROI is so huge. You know, for a lot of my clients, we have strategies that we're getting them $28,000 in tax-free money out of their business. And mm-hmm. So if I ask for a couple thousand dollars, it's, you're getting a return investment of at least 14 just on cash. But, you know, not everybody thinks that way.
It's a mindset, right? And that's why I wanted you to have you on, because you know, I've had this conversation with one of my tax consultants at the same time. I said, you know, she's like, well, this is how much I charge. This is how much I'm worth. This is what I can do for you. And I'm like, wow, but I can go to H&R Block and pay $70, $100. And he's like, well, this is what you're getting from me. And so I wanted you to kind of really bring that point to light, because I've had those conversations with individuals and understanding the benefit. It's an investment. You're hiring someone that is investing in your financial wealth. And they are able to basically take your $1,000 or $2,000 investment and possibly turn that into $5,000, $10,000, or a $20,000 return on your investment. That's huge. And so when you look at it that way, it's just like, man, where do I find you at, Eric? You know what I'm saying? How do I get in touch with you, right? Because that's what I want to do. I want to be able to maximize my return, maximize my benefit. So when someone is fortunate enough to get in front of you, and they have their, you know, their filings, and they're trying to put together a tax strategy, what are some of the key, or you or someone like yourself, what are some of the key questions that they should be asking? What are the first couple of things that they should be to ensure that they have someone that is qualified, someone that is going to give them great guidance, and someone that is going to really take their investment, as we just put it, and maximize the potential of it?
I would ask questions such as, you know, do you have experience in this industry? Because, you know, every industry has different tax breaks. You know, so for instance, flight attendants get tax write-offs that the average person cannot get. So you want to make sure that your tax professional, you know, is aware, you know, or for instance, are they, you know, if you're into cryptocurrency, is your tax professional aware of some of the nuances that the IRS is demanding in reporting cryptocurrency trades? So you'd want to make sure they understand that. You know, now with Google, you could go online and you can look up a tax professional. So you also look up if they got good reviews, bad reviews. You can also look up if they've been disciplined, you know, by a state accounting board. So these are things you can do ahead of time. And so, you know, see what's on their webpage. See, there are CPAs that don't put the picture themselves on their website. I have to question if they're a real entrepreneur, because if you want me to invest a few thousand dollars, I should know what you look like before I meet you.
At the very least. At the very least.
Exactly. So
good stuff. That's exactly right. And that's what we need to start thinking about. We need to start thinking like investors and less like consumers. And pursuing these opportunities and these resources, these people. Like he was talking, we have to start building teams around us. We can't do it all together. We need estate planners, we need tax planners, we need financial planners. We need people to help us put the tools in front of us to build long term wealth. Now I'm gonna just get a quick point, because I have something I really want to end the show talking to you about. But just real quick, there was a question that was asked to me, and I wanted to make sure that I posed it, because it was a friend of mine that wanted to make sure I got it in. The stimulus money that's coming, or the stimulus money that's been received, what is the best? How should we be handling that as far as tax preparation, and just thinking about the best way to use that from a business standpoint, and how that can benefit us later in our next filing in 2022.
Now, any stimulus money you receive, it's not taxable, but you do have to report on your tax return this year. So make sure you do report it. There's a line on your 1040 called recovery rebate credit because there are people that did not receive a stimulus because their income was too high. And in this past year, their income may have dropped to where they do qualify. You want to report that you didn't receive it because you may be, because you can get it on your tax return to increase the refund or reduce your tax liability. And then what to do with it, it just depends. I would definitely look into, you know, using it to pay any debts because, you know, as you know, interest rates are not going to stay this low forever. Interest rates are starting to skyrocket a little bit. I would look into, you know, having some emergency savings. And those are the two main things. And then if not, I would look to use it towards investing in something that could help you make more money while you're asleep.
Passive income. I love it. That's one of the tenets that we talk about here on Back in the Black. How do you get back in the black? Generating multiple streams of income, making your money work for you. Like you said, making your money work while you're sleeping. I love it. And so that brings me to my last point. And I've really... this is something I'm really passionate about. So it's a social enterprise model, right? I don't know how familiar you are with that governance structure, but a lot of individuals who have nonprofit organizations also have for-profit yes. businesses. And they're looking for ways to have those two entities work together without violating any tax laws. What is it that you can suggest to those individuals? Because that's, to me, that's a very progressive model. Mm-hmm. And it's something, especially as a social entrepreneur like myself, who is trying to make an impact in the communities of color, I want to be able to create these for-profit businesses that can generate income for the community, generate income for these individuals who are looking to create, for example, passive income by right. creating investment opportunities. But there are others that have businesses, T-shirt businesses, for example, that say they have a nonprofit that serves kids, but they also have a T-shirt business. How can those two things work synergistically together so that they can maximize those two entities and the kind of the tax benefits that come along with those?
Well, you want to make sure that those two entities are not commingling their funds. And then if you're going to operate like that, anybody you do business with needs to get a full disclosure that you do have a not-for-profit. One thing that we found is that a lot of people say they have a not-for-profit, but they've not registered it properly to the IRS. So if you're not sure if a not-for-profit is registered, you can always go to the IRS website, look up 501c3s. We saw a situation in San Diego where somebody was alleged to have a not-for-profit, thought they registered properly, never did, and it took Lori to keep some people from going to jail. Mm. So make sure to register properly. The not-for-profit has to have a clear objective and purpose, and it has to operate separately from the for-profit. You can't have the same people running the for-profit as not-for-profit. So those are the things that I would advise to people out there.
Great advice. Great advice. I'm going to let everybody know that my 501c3 is registered. So I'm not just saying this because Eric has just put me on blast here, so making sure that everybody is not commingling funds. We have a separate board. We have separate members. We understand the process. And if you guys need help with working your social enterprise and synergistically with your for-profit, with your nonprofit, creating a social enterprise or just trying to maximize the benefit, we can help you. Individuals like Eric can help you. Make sure that you are, you know, above board with the IRS, because those are some big bad guys, as Eric can say, when it comes to affecting your money. Now, I want you to give us one hero story, Eric. Tell me about your most proudest moment as a tax professional. Like you said, I'm sure you've helped hundreds of clients. You've probably had, you know, a range of success with getting them returns. But what is for you? What do you think has been the most rewarding either case or individual that you had to work with, entity that you had to work with? Or just tell us about one of your most proudest experiences being a tax professional.
That's a great question. The story that comes to mind is I have a client that's a realtor, and he got behind on his taxes, and he had just gotten married and just now had a baby. And at one time, his tax debt was $175,000. Hmm. We were able to negotiate the IRS and get it down to $13,000, which really helped change his life. And now he's more confident in being a father and a husband and he's, you know, walking around more confident himself. So just to see being able to help change people, literally change people's lives and financial trajectories, is a great feeling.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. And I'm so proud of the work that you've done, and the work that you continue to do. I wish you much success. Tell everybody where they can find you at, and any resources that, that you provide. You said you had a nonprofit organization that also does some work. Let us know where we can find you and where others can, how others can use you as a resource.
Okay, so I do not have a not-for-profit right now. Someday I will. But the best way to find me, you can go to my website, www.pierreaccounting.com. You can also find me on Instagram at Pierre Accounting. You can find me on Twitter at Your Fave CPA. You can also type Pierre Accounting on Facebook. And then if you're not sure how to find me, just type my first and last name, Eric Pierre, comma CPA, and you'll find me easy that way.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric. Thank you so much for helping us get back in the black during tax season. I wish you all the success. Ladies and gentlemen, I will also have this information posted on our Instagram, Back in the BLK, our Facebook, all of our social media so that you can follow Eric. Make sure that you find someone that can help you develop a tax plan for this tax season and the next. We want to all make sure that we get in the best position to win, to get back in the black. We have to be smart. We have to have strategies. We have to build a team. We have to do it collectively. And we have to use the resources that are available to us. So use them. Don't shortchange yourself. Like you said, if you can spend a little extra money on a pair of J's, you can spend a little extra money on buying a car, you don't feel like that's overpriced, go ahead, spend the money and investing in your long-term wealth by hiring you a tax professional that can really get your business maximized as far as its benefits and the tax breaks that you need and deserve. Thank you again, Eric. Much success to you, brother. Everybody, we'll be back next week. Back in the black. Stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, 80s and Change, that's our show. Thanks once again for joining us. Don't forget, we're on LJDN Radio at 10 o'clock a.m. every Saturday morning. Make sure you tune in to LJDN.com. Not to mention, you can catch up on previous episodes as well as the new episode on BackInTheBLK.com. You can also check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Black Talk Radio Network. And please don't forget to follow me on social media at BackInTheBLK. You find me on all platforms. Not to mention EmpoweredStudios.com. Listen to the How Free Is Free project. It's something you don't want to miss. Join me next week for a new guest, a new episode. Stay locked in this stream. Until then, be bold, be innovative, be empowered. Peace.